1 o'clock. Anybody have a cell phone that has real time? Oh, good, it's 101. Perfect. Since it is 1 o'clock, I'm going to go ahead and call to order the meeting of the Inspector General Selection and Retention Committee. And we will begin with introductions for the record. And let's start to my left.
Yes, ma'am. Angela Corey, State Attorney's Office.
Judge Elizabeth Centerfit with the Circuit Court.
Carrie Stewart, Mayor's Office.
Lori Boyer, Jacksonville City Council.
Tom Paul, Ethics Commission.
Mark Hassan, True Commission.
Rhett Geller, Public Defender's Office.
And thank you all again for taking the time to be here. On our agenda, we are going to do the Pledge of Allegiance first, and my apologies to hear you all talking for that. So if you'll join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Good way to start. So we have before us the first item on the agenda is a copy of the May 16, 2016 minutes. Do I hear a motion with respect to the minutes?
I move that they be accepted.
Second.
And if I could, is there any discussion by anyone else? Seeing none, I did have one comment at the end of Roman numeral 2 paragraph, where it says, Ms. Steckler offered to be more specific on the core competencies and discuss one add-on item. I just mentioned that to Ms. Steckler. Ms. Steckler, can you elaborate on what the add-on item is so that we can get that in the minutes?
Absolutely. The add-on item was under core competency 2, business acumen, measure number 6. It was pertaining to your six-month report, a verbal briefing, and we added the language, six-month briefing should include at a minimum a summary of all questions identified and avoidable costs and recoveries.
Questions identified and avoidable costs and recoveries. So that was the add-on language that to be included in the six-month briefing. Okay. So I would suggest that we incorporate that as an amendment to the minutes. Does anyone have any concern or discussion about that? So I have a motion to approve the minutes, and with your permission, with that amendment, and a second.
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying yes.
Yes.
And opposed, the minutes are approved. Okay, let's move on to the discussion regarding exclusion of former city employees. So there was a comment at the meeting last week regarding language that in the code currently that excluded anyone who had been an employee of the city of Jacksonville or any agency subject to the jurisdiction of the IG's office. And we had some conversation about whether that then included the independent authorities now and where that went within the last 2 years. When we went back and looked, that is not actually in the qualifications section of the ordinance code, but it appears in the duties section of the ordinance code. And I went ahead in the interim period and met with Ms. Sidman and introduced legislation last week to City Council that would eliminate that provision from the ordinance code. I did that in anticipation of this meeting. We can withdraw that bill if we want to, or we can let that bill go through. The idea being that I heard at the discussion a desire to broaden the potential pool of applicants. That is not to say that relationships with the city would not be considered as potential conflicts or would not be considered in evaluating candidates, because I think they certainly could be a challenge and could be a problem, but just trying to provide a greater pool. We did some research on how that language got inserted, and unless Ms. Steckler has new information, the information that we have is it was an internal request from one of our departments, because at that point in time our employees had been under a hiring freeze for a number of years, and they were concerned that this position might steal employees from another department. I don't think that's a good rationale to have the provision. I think there are other rationales that might be worthwhile to have the provision, but not the one that we used. So I have that legislation pending. I want this group to discuss substantively how they feel about whether we should only look at candidates who have not been employed by the city or an independent authority, or whether we should open up the at least application pool to those and then just use that as an evaluative criteria when we get applications. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, based on the conversations we had in the last meeting, I think I'd be in favor of a motion to for this committee to pass a resolution to support that vote.
Okay.
I agree. I just think it makes sense for us to open up our net a little bit. As you were saying, certainly that could be something we would want to consider when we're reviewing applications and then through the interview process and later, of course, in the evaluation. An applicant's connection, their previous employment, wherever it is going to be something we will want to look at and consider. But to have this absolute prohibition that we cannot even consider an applicant that in every other way appears to be a good potential applicant, and it just doesn't make sense to make that an absolute prohibition.
So I heard a motion in support of the current legislation, which would eliminate that language. Is there a second to that motion then?
I'll second that.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on that? Anyone who has a concern about that that wants to raise that? Seeing none, all in favor of that motion, please indicate by saying yes.
Yes.
Opposed? Okay, that motion carries. And let me tell you, the timing of this is Ms. Sidman and I took the most conservative approach, which was to treat this as if this legislation would be introduced and considered tomorrow evening. It is entirely possible that the council will choose not to do that. But at least in terms of public notice, we have provided the most extreme potential situation. And if the council decides that they want it to go through committee instead, then it would be referred to committee and would not come out tomorrow night. I will be advising the council that this impacts our timeline for advertisement, because we would then probably back up and withhold advertisement until such time as we had a result one way or the other on that action. So that's where that stands, and we'll see what happens tomorrow. I can send you out an email after the meeting and let you know. So let's move on to item number 3, which is appointment of the interim inspector general. Last meeting, we discussed that each of us would be reaching out to people, looking for some potential candidates who might be able to serve in that capacity, and asking them to provide resumes or information to Ms. O'Leary. And Ms. O'Leary, do you want to give us a report on where we stand and what your suggestions are and how many you received?
Certainly. Within your folders, you'll have two resumes. We had two candidates being put forth, one by the name of Stephen Rohan, who's a former city employee, and Christopher Miller. Mr. Miller was put forth. He has 30 years of business administration experience related to human resources officer with the U.S. Army. Almost 6 years of this service was as an inspector general for the U.S. European Command and for the Florida National Guard. He has extensive investigation efforts throughout Europe and Florida and served as board programs and policy advisor to the senior human resources general officer at the Pentagon. Mr. Rohan, as I mentioned, is a former city employee. He spent 30 years with the Office of General Counsel in capacities such as deputy chief, managing deputy, and head of various departments within the Office of General Counsel. He's very well versed in our budget preparation process, has served as the city's chief EEO attorney, and as well as the city's ethics officer. My recommendation, based on Stephen's background, would be that the committee consider him since he's so intimately familiar with city government and has, you know, really, I think, worked with Cheryl quite a bit on the development of the charter and is well versed in city operations.
Is there any discussion or motion from the committee?
I'll just add, I talked to Ms. Milner before our trip, and she commented much the same way Ms. O'Leary did, that Mr. Rohan, in addition to what he has on his resume, has been intimately involved in the establishment of the office, in the referendum, in the ethics legislation. He's been working behind the scenes with Ms. Milner for years on this. So he not only is very intimately aware of and involved with the role of the IG's office, but also knows the various players and parties. Mr. Milner looks very strong on paper, looks like someone who we might want to consider long-term, but in terms of if we're really looking at someone who can help us best advance the office in 3 months, it looks like Mr. Rohan could help us with a running start.
Thank you.
Listen.
Can I just ask a question? I was just wondering, do we know if either or both of these are still going to intend to apply for the permanent position?
I can't say for certain. I would expect or anticipate that Mr. Milner would likely apply for the position. As I understand it, Mr. Rohan would not likely apply.
Mr. Rohan at least is in the audience. I don't know Mr. Milner, so I don't know if he is here as well. So if anyone has a question for him or would like to raise any issue, you know, please feel free to do that. If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept Steve Rohan as interim Inspector General for the City of Jacksonville.
I have a motion to appoint Steve Rohan as interim Inspector General. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying yes.
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 Opposed?
Yes.
And we have made that decision. And I think that in light of that, there's probably a few details before we move on to the next item, and Ms. O'Leary can help me if I'm missing any of them. I know that the vote at our last meeting was that we would offer the position up to 30 hours per week, and that it was our thought that this was a position that would be open between now and the time we fill the vacancy, but that we will be advertising and interviewing immediately so that it might be 3 to 4 months, and that was the time frame we were looking at. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and I think we'd also discussed the posted salary range for the Inspector General, and we had asked you to do some calculation on the hourly rate if we were doing an up to 30 hours.
Okay. Yes, the last committee meeting, to the chair, the salary range was identified at 120 to 160 per year annually. If we broke that down to a per hour rate, the minimum side of the scale would yield 57.69 in terms of hourly wage. If we took into consideration the up to 30 hours, that equates to $17.30 per week and $20,768 for a period of 12 weeks. I just took the 3 months and anticipated that be the timeline since we're trying to skip that.
And that is well within the budgetary authorization that we already have, correct?
That is correct. They have the dollars. What we will have to do is identify part-time hours and transfer those once we exhaust the part-time hours that are within the IG's budget right now.
And so help me remember, we have the budget amount already. We have some part-time hours, and we could transfer in additional part-time hours. And I think there's a third criteria that when we're looking at employment services. Ms. Sidman, when we were talking about it, can you help me? What was the...
Just so you want to make sure that there's a position available, you're not bumping the cap. And since Mr. Klein will be exiting, you have your position, and then you have also his salary, and so you could move some of that over within the TD
So we are completely within the purview of what has already been approved in the budget, and you're not suggesting there is any council action that is required to make any change in the budget to take this action?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Ms. Sitman?
Just following up on the council action, I pulled the two items that the council had approved previously. One was a contract with Ms. Steckler. That was an interlocal agreement with the state attorney's office. That had council approval. The second piece was when Mr. Klein came on board, there was an approval for that. When I look back at the code provision, it does contemplate a contract with the IG. I don't think that the council at the time contemplated another interim IG provision. And so my question just is whether or not there would be a council approval of the appointee that you all have done, or whether or not we would approve a contract or have any sort of authority for the committee, because it's contemplated the committee chair would enter into a contract with the IG, but I didn't know about the interim IG. And I only ask you because we have council tomorrow night and I know that you don't want to break the service.
So I guess I'm going to be looking to you or to Ms. O'Leary, someone else here, for advice on that. And if you believe that we are required to have council approval of the interim appointment, then I would be amending perhaps the legislation that I have pending and attempting to do that to get council confirmation of that action. If you do not believe that is required, because I think on our initial reading, we were viewing it like the hiring of a new IG, the permanent position, but that much like within the administration, acting employees are hired as director of a department, and pending their confirmation by council, they're still an employee, that this was more serving in that capacity and didn't require approval. So I'm going to wait to hear what the authorities over here tell me we have to do. My apologies for the delay. This is just developing news. Everything is always wrong.
Okay. Sorry for this game time decision. But so just in conferring with employee services, again, we confirmed that there's dollars in the budget for an interim, that there is within the cap, this would be permitted. And within the code in 602.305, it allows the chair of the committee in coordination with OGC to negotiate a contract of employment with the inspector general. And so since the vacancy is supposed to be under the same terms as a regular inspector general, we think that the code probably allows for that negotiation to take place. But if you would like to, so that would be our recommendation.
Okay. So is the committee okay with that if we just then move forward, and if Ms. Sidman is telling us we need a contract in place, that we go ahead and let Ms. O'Leary work with Mr. Rohan, draft and prepare the contract. I can, as chair of the committee, can review or sign off on it as long as it is consistent with all of those things that we have identified, not more than 30 hours. And I think that we discussed that it would be near the lower end of the salary range is what the conversation had been on the interim basis. Is that correct, Ms. O'Leary?
To the chair, yes, it is.
So is everybody good with that?
Yes. Are we okay to defer to you on any additional actions that are required to execute the request we just approved?
I mean, wasn't there something, we talked about this before, that we could have just let you do this whole thing anyway? We have now selected the person, we know the dollars are there, so I would, if I can, move that we allow Chairwoman to complete any details, if there needs to be a contract, that we allow her to do that.
So I'm administratively finalizing our action, is that?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll second that motion.
Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
I don't know the long time, but I'll deal with it.
I think you're wrong.
I know. Okay, that brings us to, and thank you, Mr. Rohan, for offering to do this. Appreciate your willingness to step in. The approval of the Inspector General job advertisement, and if we could, first go back to the timeline. So it's not officially on the agenda, but it's part of the job advertisement. And so what I would suggest is the second line of the timeline, where it says May 24th to June 13th, advertise the position. At a minimum, it would not be before May 25th. And I think that we need to somehow put an asterisk on the timeline and indicate that in the event final council action is not taken on May 25th with respect to exclusion of city employees, that the entire timeline will be pushed back until that is resolved one way or the other. And then the advertisement will just proceed based on whatever action was taken. Is that acceptable to everyone? I don't know that we need a motion on this because I don't think we formally adopted the timeline, but I just want everybody's expectations to be set appropriately. Okay. And Ms. Steckler, are you okay with that? Okay. All right. So now let's go to the qualifications and the advertisement and the posting. And Ms. Steckler, do you want to run by the things that you already revised in this? And then I sent out a couple questions yesterday to the committee, which thank you everyone for not responding. Good job. But at least I gave you an opportunity to think about it if you wanted to. So, Cheryl, do you have your emails and memo?
What you all discussed and we have changed based on the discussion under knowledge, skills, and abilities, it used to be thorough knowledge on the first two bullets, I believe, and we've matched language analysis considerable. And the other, on the second bullet, it used to read considerable knowledge of auditing, investigating, and contracting, it now reads and or. And then the last change was down, had the preferred experience, second bullet, certified public accountant or internal auditor or government attorney with expertise in cases involving fraud and mismanagement.
Okay. Anybody have any questions on those changes? Okay. If I could bring up my two points of discussion that I raised yesterday. So as I'm looking at this, I guess I need the personnel definition of what an open requirement is first, because it was unclear to me under the five bullets that appeared there. I think 1, 2, 4, and 5 were mandatory, and 3 was optional. So I wasn't sure what open requirements meant.
To the chair, open requirements really is derived out of the civil service rules and regulations. That's the terminology that the city uses for priority 1 and priority 2 candidates. So open requirements is to imply that it's openly competitive. And so those would be the requirements in which they have to meet in order to compete for the position. Secondly, in terms of what the bullets are underneath the open requirements, we match them directly from the qualifications as listed in the ordinance. And I understand that there is a reference to a recommended a certification, but that appears within the ordinance. So we took verbatim what the qualifications for the IG were, and we embedded them within the open requirements.
So to the committee, my concern was, and maybe everyone reading this is familiar with our civil service rules and knows what open requirements means. But if they're not, I might suggest that for publication purposes, we say something like minimum requirements or mandatory qualifications or something like that, so that it's clear 1, 2, 4, and 5 you must have. And then put the professional certification just recommended or something, so that there it's clear that there's a distinction, because it wasn't clear. Is everyone okay with the thought on that? The next...
Did you have a question?
Yes, on number five, it seems to revert back to number three.
Right.
So the certification is recommended, and then the last bullet is, unless the certification is already held, the Inspector General shall be required to obtain certification within 24 months of becoming Inspector General. They seem to go hand in hand.
Well, and that seems not to be a qualification for employment. That seems like it should fit somewhere else.
Right.
So I agree with you. Plus, I had a question on that as certification as what? Because in number three, you can be a certified Inspector General, a certified Inspector General Auditor, a certified Inspector General Investigator, a certified Internal Auditor, and it just says you're required to obtain certification within 24 months. Well, certification of what?
This language actually mirrors almost state law, and it mirrors most Inspector General language. What it means is that it expects that a qualification would be that you have a certification in some field relative to the Inspector General community. In addition to that, there is a requirement that within 2 years you must become also a certified Inspector General. And in fact, the state law changed 2 years ago where they're now requiring two certifications before you can walk in the door, still allowing for the certified Inspector General to happen within 2 years. So they take as far as the state government and local government and many other governments, they take the Inspector General certifications pretty seriously. So it is expecting those type of certifications before you even walk in the door, knowing that the certified Inspector General is only offered once, now it's offered twice a year, and it's just not something you can get right away. That's why they move that to department.
Well, and I did read your copy of 20.055 Florida statutes that you provided us, and you are correct, but there's also some interesting things as I was reading it about you can be certified, the Inspector General or the Director of Auditing has to be certified in the auditing portion, but so the Inspector General doesn't necessarily have to be certified in the auditing portion. I mean, there were a number of either ors as I went there. So to go back to Ms. Stewart's point, if we left 1, 2, and 4 as mandatory qualifications, and then we put 2 as a recommended, and maybe add five to the end of it, just saying unless the certification is already held, then you're expected to do it. But I think you should provide some clarity also, which is if you're not required to become a certified Inspector General, which the state law doesn't require, but you are required to obtain one or more of the listed certifications within 24 months, then I think that's what we should say.
Through the chair, the state law does require the 2-year requirement on the CIG. All Inspector Generals must get that. But also remember, this is a position description, and I don't have it with me, but I almost can't remember. The job ad does say minimum and mandatory and what's required. It's a little bit different. It takes the language, but I can't refresh my memory, but I thought the job ad actually does have minimum and mandatory. I think it's a little bit more clear on the actual job ad itself. This is, no? Okay, I thought it was.
Okay.
So clearly, it's easy to do the required versus the like to have.
So if bullet number 1 is required, bullet number 2 is required, and bullet number 4 is required.
Correct.
And we're going to identify that.
Yes.
And then bullet number 3 is recommended. And if you want to add the language in bullet number 5 to the end of number 3 to simply say that if at the time you're hired you don't have those certifications, you'll be required to obtain them or required to obtain one or more of them. I think we should just be more explicit as to what we're saying they have to get and make sure that whatever we require is consistent with what we've got in the code.
For clarification, through the chair, the requirement must be the CIG, must be the certified Inspector General, not the others. That's required by state laws, required every code that we have in the state of Florida. So that requirement on that last bullet is strictly for the certified Inspector General.
Okay.
Very much along those lines. I understand this is a position description. To the extent this is what's also used to advertise, consider the reader. And if there's a way to change or even parenthetically include in the open requirements section required qualifications, And then down below, if that next section is amended to say preferred experience and qualifications, that might then make this more understandable to a reader exactly what it is we're looking for.
Are you suggesting in the preferred experience we put preferred experience and qualifications?
Yes, I'm sorry, adding and qualifications.
I'm not sure that that isn't confusing again. You know, so okay. Is this a minimum requirement? Is this stuff you have to have or not? I mean, to me, preferred experience and qualifications are two different things. Oh, I mean, you would like someone to have this, but they don't have to. But if you say it's a qualification, that I would tend to read that as you got to have it.
So you're reading the word qualification as a mandatory.
Yeah.
So preferred experience or certifications? It's almost no.
That works for me.
Okay, because those are optional. Those are preferred.
Yeah. Not sure should be
and yes, yes. Okay. Did anyone have any further edits or suggestions to the portion of this that refers to open requirements, supplemental information, preferred experience, the last two operative sections? And do it. Ms. Steckler and Ms. O'Leary, are you comfortable that you have captured what we've... Okay. And then the only other thing is the note at the bottom. And so my understanding is the note at the bottom would be removed in its entirety, depending on what council action is, or it would stay in place.
That is correct.
Okay. So with those changes incorporated, do I have a motion on the advertisement
as amended?
As amended. I have a motion by Ms. Stewart.
Second.
And a second. Is there any discussion on the job advertisement as amended? Seeing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying yes.
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 Opposed? And we have adopted that. Which brings us down to new business. Any new business from anyone? Any comments from the public?
Madam Chair, I do just have one item. I will be out of town for 10 days, starting July 19th, but I'm sure Joe Jaco, if that ends up being when we are able to conduct interviews, I would imagine that he would be available.
Okay. Ms.
Beckler,
did you have a comment?
Through the chair, if the job ad does get held up, it definitely will not be during that time period, so I think we're going to be good to go. Probably we're screening and we're selecting the top 10 will be the end of July if it gets delayed. And your interviews will be mid-August.
Okay. Any? Pardon me?
Yes.
Mr. Marco.
I wanted to clarify the discussion at the beginning about the whether or not somebody can be considered from locally for the permanent position. I was just harking back to what Mr. Klein emphasized last week about why it hit his mind it needed to be somebody from outside due to things like patronage and conflict of interest, I would imagine. But I just want to make sure that was what was really discussed.
And I think the committee all got that email. I heard that, and I'm certainly aware of that, and I think that is definitely a criteria to be considered in evaluating any candidate. I think that's something we're going to have to clearly avoid. I also think it is possible to have a candidate who has worked somewhere in city government or for one of the independent authorities that doesn't fall squarely within that conflict. But it's just going to depend on what they did and what relationships they had and who they are, whether that's the case or not. So, any other comments? If not, we are adjourned. Thank you all for your time.